Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Story time.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So, I used to be a ranger in Colorado, specifically about 7 years ago. I loved the job. I loved being outside and enjoying nature. Respect for animals and plants was always very important to me. So I made sure the guests would follow the rules. Patrolling the trails and park maintenance was my job. I was very fit at the time, something that is very necessary for a job like this. It's not easy and can be very physically demanding. I do recommend the job to nature lovers and social butterflies. The story I'm about to share with you isn't the reason I quit to get an office job. I was forced to quit. A direct blow to my right knee in a car accident caused a very bad fracture that I never fully recovered from. Now, I can't stand up for longer periods of time, so as a job, it became impossible. Now, for my story. 2 years before the car accident, I was working pretty late. This was during the winter, so it got dark pretty early. I was by myself, and there was nobody around. I was cleaning up the trash left by the visitors and moving debris and tree branches on the side of the trails. This had happened a few times. I really took my time making the trails as safe as possible. That night, a lot of trash was seemingly left behind. It took me longer than I anticipated, and I lost track of time. I don't really mind working late, I was single and childless at the time, I just had my dogs waiting for me back at home. As I said before, there was nobody around, and it was as quiet as it can get in the park. At some point, I heard a really loud sound, like something heavy was thrown onto the ground. I assumed it was a tree branch. I looked up to where I heard the noise and walked towards it, expecting to see some wood or something. When I came closer, I noticed there wasn't anything on the ground. But right after making that observation, I heard the same loud thud a bit further away from me. When I directed my eyes towards where I heard the second noise, I was surprised to see the silhouette of a person standing behind a tree. This person was very small, so small that it could have been a child. I never encountered a person by themselves that late at night, nobody was supposed to be there. I just stood there watching for a while until I decided to ask the person what they were doing there. As soon as the first words left my mouth, this person began running. They weren't really fast and surprisingly didn't trip over anything. I began chasing the person immediately, not giving them a lecture but to make sure they didn't get lost in the woods. That would be incredibly dangerous and could result in injury or even death in extreme cases. At some point, after a lot of running and calling out for them, they disappeared out of sight. I was surprised at how fast this person was. I considered myself to be very fit, and I even used to go running frequently in high school. It seemed impossible to me, but that wasn't what I was worried about at the moment. I called my supervisor to report the incident. He told me to wait for him and that one of my colleagues would do a search together with me. As soon as I ended the call, I heard the same thud behind me. This was in the opposite direction of where we were running towards. I was certain that this person could not have walked past me without noticing. I was very confused. I turned around and saw the same silhouette behind another tree. I was pretty sure it was the same person as they were the same height and posture. Once again, I called out for this person, but there was no reaction. However, when I took a step towards them, they began running in a completely different direction. After I lost them once, I realized I didn't really know where I was, so I decided to find my way back. As I tried to find my way, I felt like I was walking in circles. It was confusing, as I usually navigated around the park without any issues. I was lost. When I tried to call my supervisor to help find my way back, I had lost service somehow. I tried multiple times, but it did not work. I began getting scared. I called out for the stranger, and once again, there was no reaction. I walked around for hours but did not get anywhere. I decided to get some rest and wait for the sun to rise. I fell asleep sitting against a tree and was woken up by a woman and her child. The walk-in trail was only a few meters from where I had slept. I was certain at the time that I wasn't close to any trail. It was so weird and unsettling. I don't know how to explain how I felt for a couple of months after this happened. I had very bad nightmares about the same situation. My supervisor and colleague had been looking for both me and the stranger that night after my call but did not find either one of us. They were also a bit confused about the situation but told me that it must have been a teenager trying to play tricks and that I was just too tired to navigate myself. I know that's not true, but I don't know how to logically explain what happened that night. Maybe all of you can help me. I believe that I saw a cryptid that most people would know as a dog man or a wolf man in the New Jersey Pine Barrens. When I received my driver's license at 17 years old, I started spending all my free time outdoors, hiking all over the East Coast but mostly within the New Jersey Pine Barrens. I worked as a naturalist at Batstow Village in Wharton State Forest for a while, which is the biggest state forest within the Pine Barrens. I got the job before my internship ended due to my knowledge of plants and animals. They did not expect me to have the credentials because at the time I was not even finished with my first semester in college. I only give out this information because when I see an animal in the woods, day or night, I know with 100% certainty what I'm looking at. And after almost 6 years from the time of writing this story, I can't wrap my head around the creature that I saw. I am an open-minded person to a point. I do believe certain cryptids can exist solely if the biology of the creature is possible, but that does not put a bipedal canine on my list. Roughly about 6 years ago, I along with two of my friends, one a welder and one a mechanic and I will be naming the welder Chris and the mechanic Alan, went off-roading in my friend Alan's truck somewhere in Manchester, New Jersey. We met with a bunch of Alan's off-roading buddies in a spot they frequented. I do not know the specific area, only that it was in Manchester, New Jersey and it was very close to the general vicinity of the abandoned brick factory, and hung out for a few hours, drove around the dirt trails and just had a good time socializing with other people. I did not have any alcohol or any pot in my system because after we left I had to drive myself home, so I was sober along with my Alan who was also sober, but my friend Chris was a bit high. We were beginning to leave and as we were taking the trails to get back to the main road my friend Alan told me to help look out for deer. He was driving about 35 miles per hour because the dirt path we were on was pretty open, about 30-ish feet wide and we were dead in the middle in case he did have to respond to a deer jumping out of the tree line. A few minutes go by and my sharp eye spot a deer running alongside the truck, but within the tree line so the view of it wasn't more than a dark brown patch of fur. As I'm about to say something to my friend Alan, thinking that this deer is going to run in front of the car and try to commit act of unaliving himself, it speeds up its pace significantly, and gets about 20 feet ahead of the truck still in the tree line, and then proceeds to jump out in front of the truck. For as long as I live I will never forget what I saw that night. It ran onto its two back legs, looked right up at us, and to our horror, it ran by this about 30 foot wide dirt road in 2 to 3 steps and went into the opposite tree line. In those few seconds, I saw this dog man or wolf man and to this day I cannot forget what I saw. It was roughly 7 feet tall, covered in dark brown fur, every inch of its body I saw was covered in this dark brown fur, but the chest or stomach area had less fur and a lighter colored fur than the rest of the body, but even under all this fur you could make out extreme muscle definition, very similar to an Olympic bodybuilder. It also had a canine type of head with a long snout, two distinct perked up wolf ears, and large muscular legs. The torso and arms of were similar to that of a very muscular man with large hands. The hands had visible claws that looked like they could do some real damage, and its eyes reflected an unnatural color of light that I hadn't seen in the animal kingdom. As soon as it jumped into the opposing tree line my friend Alan slammed on the brakes, and my friend Chris said, "I know I'm high, but what the hell was that?" My friends, puzzled by what we just saw looked at me and said, "Okay, Nature boy, please tell us that was something explainable." I sat there dumbfounded and told them I did not have an answer based on reason, science, or anything I could logically think of and my friend Alan hightailed it out of there. To this day my friend Chris has convinced himself that it wasn't a hallucination because of the pot and my other friend Alan, who does not believe in the supernatural, and absolutely refuses to have an open mind, does not speak about this event and pretends it didn't happen. To this day I still have no logical explanation for what I saw, I do not believe that a bipedal canine creature could logically or biologically exist, but what I saw was something matching that description with my own eyes, and it is very real. In November last year, my friend and I started to drive up to Scotland to do some fishing and eventually make our way to Edinburgh. After the first day of catching some salmon and brown trout, we stored our catch in the cooler box. We contemplated whether to sleep in the car that night since we had left quite late to set up camp, around 4:30-ish, and the sun was going down. Eventually, I said, "Let's set up a fire and cook the fish. I didn't drive all the way to Scotland to sleep in the car." My friend agreed. As we set off looking for a spot to camp, we found a little wooded area next to a car park near a farm. We had looked into it prior, and apparently, you can basically camp anywhere in Scotland as long as you leave the place as you found it. So, we grabbed all of our gear out of the car and started setting up our campsites. 20 minutes later, we had a fire going, two fold-up chairs, and two tents set up. My tent was out of view from my friend, this will be relevant later. We were glad we chose to camp outside instead of sleeping in the car as we smoked a few joints and reminisced about school life, etc. My friend struggled to keep his eyes open, and at 2 a.m., he called it a night, crawling into his tent and zipping it shut. I sat there with my feet up on my friend's now empty chair, listening to the sounds of the wildlife. I shut off the torch I had hung up on the tree next to us, leaving us in darkness apart from the burning embers from the coal. It must have been 3 or so minutes before I started to hear the crunching of leaves and snapping of twigs that seemed to be coming toward me. Being a quite rational person, I passed it off as a fox drawn to the scraps of food we might have laying around. I was quickly proven wrong when I heard a sniffle, like someone with a cold clearing their nose. My hair quickly turned from chilled out to paranoia as I felt a heavy dread come over me, my mind racing. Why the hell would someone be here in the woods at 2 to 3 a.m.? Why are they coming towards me? I slowly reached down into my pocket and felt my heart drop as I didn't feel the smooth blade of my pocket knife. I must have left it in the tent. All the while, I heard the shuffling coming closer and closer, and my heartbeat racing. Through the darkness, I saw a middle-aged man, clean-shaven with parted hair, around 5'10", slowly creeping toward me, almost on all fours like a predator trying to stay out of sight. I sat there paralyzed, unable to speak. My mouth was so dry that I could hardly swallow. That's when I realized he hadn't even seen me. Being under the tree with no light source, I must have blended in. Also, with there only being one tent in view, I guess he thought my friend was the only one camping here. He got closer to the tent and half-breathed, half-whispered, "Come on, do it," in a raspy voice, creeping me out. Unable to bear the thought of what he might do next, I finally spoke up, "Oi, can I help you?" He jumped up in shock, and his whole demeanor changed. He looked at me mumbling awkwardly as he scurried back out of the woods. I sat there still trying to comprehend what had just happened and what I saw. Then, I saw headlights of a car turn on and drive away. I woke my friend up, and although he couldn't fully grasp what had happened, he could see how shook up I was. Without a full explanation from me, he let me grab our gear, and we slept in the car that night with the doors locked. I would like to tell you about an experience that I and my friend went through in Detroit, Michigan on Saturday, August 3, 2013. It was a typical Saturday night. My friend and I were hanging out around the neighborhood and not really doing much at all. We decided to walk over to Parian Park, smoke some weed, and just hang out. This was at about 9:30 p.m. We walked over and found a bench that was a bit out of the way and would provide us some privacy to let us smoke in peace. At about 11 p.m. we decided to leave the park when we heard some rustling in the trees behind us, followed by what sounded like laughter. Tiny, high-pitched, almost childlike laughter. We thought at first it was someone messing with us and stood up and yelled out, "Cut it out, jackasses, we're not falling for it." This was met with more laughter and more rustling from the trees. Suddenly, two small people jumped out of the tree and almost floated down to the ground in front of us. We jumped back when we saw these two small people, almost yelling from the sudden surprise that their sudden appearance had given us. These two small people, both male, could not have been any more than 4 feet tall, stocky, and looked like they were wearing green three-piece suits. They looked almost like they were wearing leprechaun costumes and carrying what looked like walking sticks. My friend later told me that they looked almost like Hornswoggle from the WWE, which I had to agree that they really did. They looked at us for about 5 seconds, with no sound, and no movement. We were totally and completely freaked out and decided to get out of there as quickly as possible. The moment we moved to start backing away, these two things jumped at us, covering the 6 to 7 feet between us in a single instant. They were on top of us, screaming loudly as they bit, scratched, and hit us with the sticks that they were carrying. They were screaming in such an inhuman way that it sounded like an animal in distress crossed with a feral human. They were ripping at our clothes, swinging at our heads with these sticks that they were carrying, all the while laughing and screaming at the top of their lungs. My friend and I were overpowered and all we could do was try to get away from these creatures and protect our heads from these sticks that they were swinging. Almost as quickly as it started, it ended and they leapt off of us, bolted toward the trees, and disappeared with nothing more than maniacal laughter. We got up and sprinted home as fast as we could go. We got home to my house and quickly shut the door and bolted it shut before we bothered to try to breathe easy and figure out what just happened to us. Both my friend and I were busted up pretty bad with a collection of scratches, scrapes, and welts to show for our encounter. We stayed in the rest of the night. We were hurting so much the next day that we couldn't move without groaning in pain. We had never seen anything like these two creatures before and could not come up with an explanation as to what it was that attacked us that night. I decided to write in after researching people reporting sightings of dwarfs, gnomes, and whatnot. I didn't think we would be seeing something like this in the middle of Detroit, Michigan, but we did and we know what we saw. We know that this sounds incredible and you might try to dismiss it as a fantasy made up by two crazy men, but we know that what we saw was real and what happened to us was definitely real. We have never spoken about it except amongst ourselves and I decided to write to you and share my story in hopes of finding an answer to what it was that happened to us. A gentleman recently from the Shelton, Laurel District of North Carolina, some 40 miles from this place, informs us that the people in that densely thicketed county are greatly excited in regard to the appearance, upon several different places, of a huge mountain monster, the species of which is unknown. Mr. George Anderson, one of the gentlemen residing in the Laurel country, being one of the persons who saw the monster, also furnishes us with the following description of it. I was out in the bush hunting up some lost hogs, when all of a sudden there came into my path a beast, the appearance of which, I must confess, caused me to quake for the first time in many years. Aside from its strange and unusual appearance, the unearthly yell it uttered on perceiving me, which reverberated and reverberated through the forest, was enough to shake the senses of the most daring adventurer. The animal was some 100 yards distant from me and appeared to be a huge black bear with mane and head like a lion, but had horns like an elk upon it. Its tail was long and bushy, with dark and light rings around it to its extremity. Its eyes gleamed like a panther's and its size was that of an ordinary ox but somewhat longer. Just previous to making its appearance I had shot off my gun at a squirrel, and felt little prepared to meet such a ferocious beast without any weapon of defense. I immediately set about reloading my rifle, but had scarcely begun when it darted toward me. I retreated in as good order as possible, and must say I did some good running not looking back until I found the animal had disappeared in the laurel thicket. This is no story, Mr. Editor, gotten up to scare naughty children. I am not the only one who has seen the monster. Several have seen it since I did, and, as sheep and calves are lately missing, it is presumed to be a carnivorous brute. Many have fortified their house to prevent a night attack from the strange monster, the like of which was never seen in these mountains before. Some think it has escaped from some rambling menagerie, while others superstitiously think it is sent to warn people of some great approaching danger. Okay, this happened to me last year in Ohio. And I still have so many questions about it. I still have a hard time coming to grips with it and accepting that monsters really are real, and that I saw one firsthand. So, bear with me here, please. I guess I should start by telling you about myself. My name is Wendy, and I'm 18 years old. I was 17 when the sighting happened. I'm a pretty shy person, not your stereotypical teenager. I like to be by myself and explore over going to parties and flirting with boys. I guess that was what started my troubles. I was out by myself when this happened. I'm also using my talk-to-text app, so if this sounds really informal, that's why. Anyways, like I said, this happened in Ohio. I'd rather not say the exact location, but if you really want to know, I think I can trust you to keep this secret. But I guess to describe where I live, I actually have to tell you that I live in the eastern part of the state, really close to the Appalachian Mountains. I was out in the woods when this happened to me. It changed my life because now I know what's really out there. It was a Saturday, around this time of the year actually, May 23rd. Because of all the pandemic 19 stuff going on, I would just spend my weekends walking around the forested areas and exploring. There really wasn't much else I could do anyways, with the world shut down and all. I'd come across this big man-made box up in a tree on a hike a few times before this. I guess it was a deer blind. Basically, it looked like a big wooden box with one side missing and a window cut in the other three sides. It was accessible from a ladder that also looked very man-made, basically 2x4s nailed together to form this makeshift ladder. I thought it was neat, and I climbed up there the first time I saw it. This time, though, I had a backpack with me with some snacks, water, and the book I was reading at the time. It was 4 Past Midnight by Stephen King. I was reading the library policeman portion when this happened. That's not too important to know, but if I was listening to somebody tell me the story, I'd be curious. So, I climbed up into the blind to read some of the book and just forget about how weird the world was lately. At this time, there were a lot of people that thought this was Armageddon or something like that. I just wanted to feel carefree for a while, but I guess it didn't really happen that way. I'd been up there for a while and actually read a lot, and I was really into it, so I have no idea just how long I was up there. But I remember hearing this weird sound. It was like a deep, deep growl, but it didn't exactly sound close, it sounded far off, which was weird to me because it sounded so loud. After that, I set my book down and listened for it again, and that's when I realized how freaking quiet it was around me. It was like I was actually inside the library. There were no animals making any kind of sound at all. And then I started hearing this crunch, crunch, crunch noise coming from the woods, and I started freaking out. My first thought was it was the guy that owned the blind, and I was in deep or with some other person, and I really didn't want to have a run-in with some stranger. I mean, I'm a teenage girl that's 5 feet 2 inches, can barely defend herself, and weighs about 110 pounds. Only it wasn't some guy that walked out of the woods, and in retrospect, I think a guy walking out of the woods would have been the least of my concerns. This was something, not someone. I barely noticed it at first because it was moving so slowly and it was really well hidden for as big as this thing turned out to be. When I first saw it, it was just peeking around the corner of this tree, and I was just peeking out around the window, so I don't think it saw me, but luckily I saw it. Now, I fully believed it not only knew that I was there, but it had smelled me or sensed me way before that. And I think that's why it was moving really cautiously at first. But when it came out into the open, I saw its whole body, and I actually had to cover my mouth to keep from screaming. For lack of a better term, even though I'm sure everyone listening knows exactly what a dog man is, what I was looking at looked like your classic effing werewolf. I mean, the head looked like a wolf, but a monster wolf, something from a scary movie. Its head was really big, the muzzle was super long, and the ear stuck straight up into the air. I could even see the skin on the front of the ear where there wasn't fur. It had a big, wet, black nose, and it kept sniffing the air with it. It was looking around every couple of seconds and would open its big ass mouth, and I could see all these terrible, horrible teeth. I could also hear it breathing. Of course, it was standing on 2 legs, and those legs were like a dramatic kind of muscular. It stood like a dog on its toes, and the fur on its legs was shaggy and kind of matted, like it was losing its coat or shedding or something. The waist and torso looked stretched out to me, like longer than a human's, but maybe not for this creature. The proportions just didn't make sense to me though. The whole coat was gray, brown, and tan. It looked like the colors were made to blend into the woods, which I can tell you it really did blend in. By now, I'm so scared I feel like puking, crying, and screaming for my mommy. If you've never felt fear like that, you're lucky. It was like unbearable how scary it really was. And it only got scarier because this thing walked right under the tree and right under the blind and started growling again, then making this weird, almost whining noise, but the whine was also mixed in with a growl. And it was so loud, I could actually feel it, and I was shaking from it, not just because I was scared, but because it felt like my insides were vibrating. Then the freaking blinds started shaking like this thing was trying to tear the whole tree down. At this point, I'm screaming. I'm not even stifling myself anymore. I knew that it knew I was there, and so I was not being quiet. I'm trying to be as loud as possible to scare this thing away, and then I hear these snapping noises and think the blind is starting to give, but it turns out later that this werewolf thing was ripping the steps off of the ladder. Now, you have to realize, I think I'm dead at this point. I just knew that that thing was gonna pull me down, destroy the blind, and eat me. It's growling and grunting. I'm screaming for help, not even trying to scare it away at this point, now just screaming and hoping somebody hears me to come help me. The noises that this thing was making were out of this world crazy, primal noises like it wanted me, and it wasn't gonna stop until it had me. I actually peed, I was so scared. Then everything stopped, and I held my breath. I guess I was just waiting for it to attack again. When it didn't attack, I peeked out of the window and saw it standing there, just staring up at me like it was trying to figure out how to get to me. And I saw an intelligence in those eyes that I haven't even seen in the primates that I see at the zoo. I screamed again, also crying my eyes out. I was trapped. I had nowhere to go, and that thing was waiting for me to come down or trying to figure out how to get to me. Either way, I thought I was toast. Then it started grunting again. It almost sounded like grunts that cavemen make in those movies. That's what I describe it as, at least. There were these spots on the floor of the blind that I could look through and saw it moving back and forth under there, just pacing and looking up. It had such a human quality that it was just surreal to me. I had the feeling that it was frustrated that it couldn't get to me. It let out a couple of barks and then got down on four legs and ran around the tree a couple of times, barking and yipping. I started screaming again, but then it stopped and looked up at me on the other side that didn't have the wall, and it actually cocked its head like a person would do and huffed like a frustrated I give up huff. And then it ran off while it was still on four legs. I got the hell out of there too in the other direction, which was not in the direction of my house, but I needed to get out of that tree and I needed to get out of the forest, and I was out in the open so I could get the hell out of there. When I went to go down is when I noticed the steps were ripped off, the ladder was a mess, and I ended up having to jump a few feet down. And let me tell you, it's a good thing that I like track and field because I tore out of there as fast as I could, and I didn't stop to take a breather, not until I was out of the forest and knew that I was safe. I left my backpack and my book and everything else there. I don't know how far up in the tree the blind actually was, but when I jumped, the steps were broken over my head, so this thing could reach up at least 6 or 7 feet, but I think it was even taller than that. It had to weigh a couple of 100 pounds too, maybe even more. I can't really describe the size of this thing, but it just looked massive. I made it home though, and I cried the whole way back and kept looking around to see if it was chasing me, but I made it home. I didn't tell anyone for a really long time and had trouble sleeping for months after that. I would actually stay up most of the night and sleep during the day, which my schedule allowed me since it was distance learning, and everybody knows that was a joke. And then it was summertime, so I didn't have school. I never will go back there. I have no intention of ever going into that area of the forest ever again, not even to show my friends where it happened. And I told every one of the people that I share my story with that if I find out they went looking for this thing, I'd be really, really upset and maybe not even talk to them again. I don't want anything happening to anyone because of me. I know it wasn't a werewolf that I saw. I know it was a dog man. It was daytime. I mean, werewolves only come out at night, right? People I tell say that I'm crazy for believing in all of these things, but if this thing is out there, then other things have to be too. Anyways, thank you for listening, and hopefully this will make it on your channel. I think you do really good work sharing the truth and letting people tell their stories for others to believe too. The woods scare me now. I don't ever want to go back in them unless I have to. It sucks, but that's the reality. What are you gonna do, right? I still haven't even finished 4 past midnight. Just reading any part of it sends me right back to that day, and I just can't do it. I know a lot of people out there, especially a lot of people that listen to these types of stories on YouTube, want to go out and find this thing, but I'd really suggest otherwise.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
And it's my advice to stay away from these things because even though I got away, it doesn't mean other people will too. And in fact, a lot of the missing persons around the woods could be because of something like this. When I was young, I was into anything unexplained, including Bigfoot, UFOs, Nessie, the Bermuda Triangle, etc., so I've always had an open mind about unexplained things. An odd connection to that interest was being raised in a Christian household. My father is a pastor and holds deep and committed beliefs in what is written in the Bible. My brothers and I were taught from a very young age that things exist beyond our normal perception and that mainstream society would actively try to dismiss things such as miracles, healing, or anything science could not explain. That belief also extended to spirits, demons, possession, and other things mentioned in the Old Testament. I mention this because beliefs in anything Christian-based and cryptic are not often associated. However, even as a child, it made me open to the idea of things that mainstream society doesn't believe in can exist and that it might be in modern science's best interest to dismiss the idea of such things since they cannot be explained by any current knowledge. The reason for this would be that modern science has been seen as having all the answers and cannot be questioned. I was also instilled with the distrust of authority as an entity and consensus as a barometer of truth and was encouraged to look for the truth myself. We were taught to keep an eye out for when lies might be more convenient than facts. That fostered a constant sense of the existence of truth outside the textbook and an awareness of the suppression of thought, but also helped keep my mind open to all kinds of things, spiritual and otherwise. We did not, however, believe in Santa, the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny, or other cartoonish things. Even within our realm of belief, there were firm limits. Some may associate any belief in God as the same as belief in Santa. However, this seemed to foster in me an openness to the unknown without believing for the sake of novelty and a focus towards what evidence does exist. People don't write books and have conferences about the existence of Santa, as far as I know. By the time this happened to me, I was well open to the idea of UFOs and believed in the existence of Bigfoot. However, I never believed I would ever see one. In fact, I'm not even sure I wanted to at the time or now. In my teenage years, I was busy with sports, music, and girls, and I had put my interest in the unknown in the back of my head until one weekend in 1995 or 1996. I am recalling this as best as my memory serves. I lived in very rural southwest Colorado at the time, in a town small enough that I could walk out my back door with a fishing pole and a rifle and hike around, and nobody would say a word. I won't mention the name because the town is small enough someone could probably find out who I am just by knowing where I lived. The area itself has tons of deer, and occasionally, it had issues with mountain lions that would move into town and take livestock and other small pets. A little further outside of town, we would see bears, and there are large areas of unoccupied forest nearby. I mention this to establish that while I live and have lived in big cities for a good chunk of my life, I also have spent plenty of time in the rural areas and wilderness, hunting, fishing, and camping. I have an uncle that lives in Denver, and at the time, he and his then wife had bought a cabin outside of Fairplay, which is where the old town of South Park City is. The area is called South Park, as a park is a flat area or valley of high elevation in a mountain range. In order to get there from Denver, you drive through places like Breckenridge, the ski resort town, to give you an idea of what the terrain was like. There are large swaths of national forests connecting around mountain peaks in areas where people either cannot access or rarely set foot. The cabins in the area were really just modern houses built out in the woods with a bit of rustic but modern amenities. There were other houses within eyesight of his cabin, and the town was not too far away, so the area was sparse but not completely isolated by any means. There were large fields of open ground, but the houses were built very close to thick forests that go up to the nearby mountains. One would simply have to cross a two-track dirt road, and you would be in a forest where you could walk in a straight line for miles without seeing any sign of a human. This cabin had a large wood patio around the back and down one side, large glass windows in the living room facing the forest, and the downstairs bathroom, the one we would primarily use, had semi-obscured glass blocks as a wall that faced the forest as well. There were motion sensor lights around the house and other modern amenities. The house was two stories, with one of the upstairs rooms having windows that faced a thicket of pine and aspen trees that was actually about 10 to 15 feet high, as the ground sloped away from the house on that side. I was 16 or 17 at the time and still in high school. Over the 4th of July weekend, my uncle invited some family and friends up to the cabin just for a few days. We arrived right at dusk a few days before the 4th. It was my mom and dad, my younger brother, two cousins, and two aunts and uncles all sharing the house for the holiday. As soon as I got out of the car, I felt a massive uneasiness come down on me like a blanket. I honestly felt scared or in danger, like I had suddenly stepped into a bad neighborhood. While I was trying to process this feeling and how out of place it was in the woods, I noticed my little brother seemed a bit jittery too. So, I asked if he could feel that. He said he did. When I asked him what he thought it was, he whispered Bigfoot, as if the word came out of him before the thought was actually in his head. Hearing him say what I was thinking made me shudder, and my hair raised on the back of my neck. We got the luggage in the house as fast as we could, with me looking over my shoulder at the tree line the whole time but also trying to act normal. The adults were busy greeting each other and did not act like anything was wrong. However, I felt like I needed to at least reach the light of the porch as soon as possible or something bad was going to happen. That night was uneventful, with the parents talking late and us kids all in sleeping bags on the living room floor. I'm pretty sure I fell asleep while the adults were still up. Being inside with them around felt safe, but I still felt very afraid about what might be outside the house. The next morning, we got up at 8 and did the typical family gathering bathroom rotation. Some of the adults went on a hike. The weather was beautiful, the sky was clear, and all sense of unease was gone completely. The area was simply gorgeous. My brother and I talked a little bit about what we had said the night before, and I think we both felt a bit foolish about being so afraid. Since there was nothing else to do, we set about exploring around the area with a loose goal of finding some kind of Bigfoot evidence. My cousin was primarily a big city kid, but when we told him what we were about, he was in. In the back of my head, I remembered some signs to look for, whether from a book or one of the few TV specials that were put out at the time. This was a time before anyone had talked about tree knocks or howling, so we stuck to looking for large animal signs. We found some odd things that morning. I spotted where leaves and bark were worn off the trees about 6 to 8 feet up. We found some small structures and oddly placed sticks in the earth, and also some saplings that had been all twisted up. Probably the most significant thing we had found was a mature aspen on its side that had been completely uprooted in the middle of a grove of other unharmed trees. There were no signs of digging or other tools, and no rot of the tree itself. Even at my young age, I could conclude that it could not have been wind or some kind of mechanical force that would have caused this without there being any damage to the rest of the trees. Their shape was too tight to allow a backhoe or truck through without scraping up the other trees. That summer had been dry, so there were no footprints or other clear signs. However, there was certainly nothing I could show an adult without sounding a little nutty, so we kept our investigation to ourselves. Most of the things we found were relatively close to the house. I'm not sure of the age of the neighborhood, but I knew the houses hadn't been there very long, and the area was slowly being developed but was still very close to large areas of uninhabited forests. Late that morning, I took a nap outside in a hammock. The breeze was perfect, there were wildflowers blooming, and it was peaceful and quiet with the exception of one of the neighboring cabin's dogs, which I could hear once in a while. We ate hot dogs, threw a football, and had a great typical summer day. After a while, I forgot what I had felt the night before. That lasted until the early afternoon, just as the sun started to get close to the mountains on the horizon. Almost like a moving fog, the sense of unease and dread came back as strong as I felt the night before. I fought with myself a bit, trying to shake the feeling off and telling myself I was being irrational and weak, but I couldn't rid myself of the feeling and did not feel relief until I was back in the house. I was flat out afraid of what was out there, and it felt like it was not only aware but interested in us. We spent the rest of the afternoon playing music upstairs as my cousin and I played guitar and bass together. We had brought our instruments. We even wrote a goofy, childish song, but I can still remember and can play to this day. The guitar riff isn't bad, but I've grown out of the lyrics comparing the past to dirty underwear, ha ha. Looking back, it's still strange the way things felt inside the house. We were surrounded by adults, light, and laughter, so I would forget what I was feeling. Then, I'd be alone for a minute or step outside to get something from the car, and be reminded again immediately. I know I did a good job hiding it because years later when I told the people that were there what we saw, nobody had any idea we were afraid at all. That evening, we drove into town and rented a movie, Vertigo, if I recall correctly, and ate dinner as a group. Some of the food prep was going on outside on the grill, but I don't know how to tell my dad or uncles that I was afraid for them and that they seemed to notice nothing at all. After dinner, some wine and beers were out along with dessert, and we put on a little concert for the adults, including the debut of our underwear song. Things were fine until the adults all trickled off into their rooms, and I was left with my brother and cousin in the living room with its large windows and very thin curtains. I was having a hard time sleeping, though my brother and cousin didn't. My brother could fall asleep anywhere and sleep through anything. Sometime in the middle of the dead calm night, the motion sensor lights came on with a barely audible click. There was no sound, no wind, and even the neighbor's dog, which had been loud all day, was dead silent. After a few intense minutes, the lights turned off, then came on again, and again. I did not dare peek out the windows, but I could picture a giant, hairy creature walking on two legs or on the porch, trying to look in with only a thin piece of glass and a white sheet of fabric separating us. I pretty much did not sleep that night. I was about 6 foot and 165 pounds, almost a full-grown adult, yet here I was in a secure house with six adults under the same roof, but as scared as a baby, wishing one of them was in the room with me. The fear was almost paralyzing. I wouldn't even use the bathroom because I was worried I would see something through the decorative glass blocks that I could not unsee. The next morning was the 4th, and everything felt fine again, but I knew that would not last. We poked around outside some more, but I really did not want to stray too far from the house now. We saw a few more things, but nothing significant. The day was very cloudy and cold, with the heat and threat of a heavy thunderstorm that might hit at any moment. Later that afternoon, some people showed up for a party, but rain came down very heavily off and on and prevented any fireworks. However, there were strange things happening around the house. A few of the visitors brought their dogs, and my uncle and his wife's two dogs, who happened to live harmoniously together for quite a long time, had a severe fight out of nowhere. My uncle had to hit his dog over the head with a shovel just to get her to let go of the other dog. It was a sort of traumatic event that I never experienced since we didn't have dogs growing up, with people crying and yelling. I heard someone say there were dominance issues between the two dogs just due to the presence of another, but I felt there was another tension in the air they could sense that was causing them to act strange. They never once fought before. Around the time when the dogs had their altercation, the feeling returned so heavily I was about to crawl out of my skin. So I asked my brother and cousin if they wanted to go hang out inside the cabin. With the threat of the storm and the dogs fighting, everything felt off and tense, like something dark was pressing down on me. This time it felt more acute, while before it had only been more of a vague sense, I felt like something was close by. We borrowed some binoculars and decided to go to the room upstairs just to see what we could see in the forest from the window. I felt a little more secure up high and out of the way. I tried to pinpoint a direction from where the feeling was coming from and focus the binoculars on that area in the trees. I was zoomed in, moving the binoculars around and trying to focus on anything odd that I could see. I began to focus the lens on one aspen when I noticed I was seeing a dark shape behind it. All at once, my eyes and brain reconciled what I was focusing on. Matted fur with sticks and leaves stuck to it, the shape of a shoulder, and then it moved. I almost dropped the binoculars, and my heart was beating on my chest as I shuddered. I just saw a Bigfoot. I began shaking and had never felt so much fear in my life. My head was spinning, still trying to figure out what I knew I had seen. My brother and cousin both took a turn looking through the binoculars immediately after me, as I wouldn't even put them back up to my eyes again. At first, they both acted like I was playing a prank, but both of them soon were as white as I was. My cousin said he was looking directly into a face with the skin texture similar to a gorilla. He said it was almost as if they made eye contact through the binoculars, and the eyes were empty and emotionless, and that made him more afraid. My brother said he saw a side profile as the creature had turned to look out into the clearing. He also described a gorilla-like profile, but he had no doubt what it was, and he also had no doubt it was interested in us. We actually shut the blinds and did not go downstairs for some time until we could act normal again. It still amazes me in this situation that I saw what I believed could have been proof of the existence of Bigfoot. It was within 100 yards of the house, yet I didn't do anything to get concrete evidence. I could have told my uncle or dad or asked to borrow a camera because my uncle is a photographer, but the fear was just so overwhelming. I couldn't even think of looking at it again, much less venturing into the woods after it. In the moment, processing the information almost makes it feel like your mind is splitting because your eyes are seeing something and communicating that back to the brain. But the brain is telling the eyes to look again because that doesn't fit with what the brain knows should or should not exist. I partially think some of the fear was just fear of the unknown. I don't have any idea if the creature would have snatched one of us or even done anything at all besides observe us, but I somehow knew it was aware that we knew it was there. We also knew that it knew it could destroy us if it chose to. We all left the cabin the next morning, and I remember feeling a great sense of relief leaving the area. It was years before I talked to any adults on the trip about what we saw. I told my dad about it late at night on another road trip across Colorado. He didn't say whether he believed me or not, but he said he felt there was so much wilderness in the US that it was conceivable to him that a North American ape could exist yet elude mankind. My uncle, who I told years later, said he wished I'd told him so he could have started looking because he hiked and fished around there all the time. He said he felt he missed out on not being aware that something might have been in the area. They sold the cabin years ago, but in the last few years, there have been many sightings in the area. There were prints casted about a mile or two from the cabin near a 4-mile creek on the backside of Pike's Peak, so sightings are frequent in the area. I have not been back to the area since but have gone back to Colorado many times. I'm sharing this story because it is so strange and I can't stop thinking about it. I just turned 59 last month and my adult son asked me what I wanted as a gift knowing I have everything I could need. I said how about a harmonica, I used to have one as a kid. So, he bought me one. It was late Saturday night, and I was alone in my breezeway on a hot Texas night when I decided to give the harmonica a try. After about 10 minutes something amazing happened to me. I had a massive flashback from 45 years ago. The memory was immediately followed by an uncontrollable wave of hair tingling joy. This memory was from back in the late 1970s when I was around 13 years old living in Southern California. This is my story. I was the youngest of 3 wild teenage boys. Back then my brothers only really tolerated my company for my coveted $3 a week allowance that I lived for. This was back in the days when gas was 0.63 cents a gallon. So, with a tank full of gas, we could cruise all around the outlying cities for adventure. A dollar got me into the back seat hanging out with the older cool kids. It was a typical summer day, and we rode out to Burbank via San Fernando Road, which we knew as the old road, and we ended up stopping at a place called the Golden Mall. They were looking for girls. I was just young and getting into innocent teenage trouble. This mall was an outdoor type of mall with fountains and an odd mix of businesses. There was a wig shop and even a Pep Boys and a hardware store. You could tell the mall was in decline as even the fountains were run down with dirty water. I witnessed something there that's been somehow locked away in my mind. While walking past what was a sort of unemployment office, I heard this amazing harmonica music down the courtyard. So, I mindlessly walked over to where it was coming from. Several adults were crowding around listening to the performance in front of this tailor shop. I was only around 4'5" and small for my age, so I easily moved in front of the adults, allowing me to see the action. This harmonica music was unlike anything I had ever heard before. It sounded totally impossible to my ears. He created trained sounds and animal calls all mixed with melodies that sounded like two harmonicas playing in unison. But what completely stunned me was when I saw the musician. He was dressed in fine Western clothing, including a pearl button shirt, spurred boots, and a tan cowboy hat. This cowboy musician was only 3 feet tall. His cowboy outfit was proportionate to his size in every detail. I could not take my eyes off him. Everything about him was impeccable. He was not a boy, nor was he a dwarf. He was a miniature full-grown man in his late 50s at the least. Off to his side was a chair holding a tin bucket full of cash. As I stood there absorbed in his performance, I noticed every person within earshot was walking over, dropping cash in his bucket, and the tiny cowboy would look up to them, and they would just walk on. Over and over and over, the people queued up to tip. My first thought as a child was, I needed to learn how to play the harmonica so I could make some money. The next thing I remember, I was staring down into the bucket and dropping all my money. When I looked up, his eyes locked directly onto mine. I remember thinking that's all I had, as I heard the clang of my coins, and he smiled and winked at me. His eyes were a glacier blue, and he had the most beautiful smiling face I had ever seen in my life. That's where the memory ends. The rest of the day is blank. No memory of leaving, driving home, nothing. However, now I can't stop seeing his face and smiling at his memory. After writing this down, I called my brother and he remembered riding around that day, but he doesn't remember anything. In all my life, I can't recall ever seeing a street performer making money like that. I'm starting to suspect that it was no ordinary encounter after hearing about other people's encounters with strange street performers. The amazing music, the never-ending tips rolling in, uncontrollably giving away all my money, and the hypnotizing wink from 45 years ago. I think I was charmed by a fae. I suspect this sort of encounter happens more often than we realize. I'd love to hear from anyone else who may have witnessed this event, but I know that's a slim chance under the circumstances. My mother and her family were working in Naples, Florida in the late 1950s. One day, workers saw something crash nearby. A plane? All the workers ran to the site to search for survivors. The aircraft was sticking out of the sea near the beach. When the rescue got there, they realized it wasn't a plane, but some type of spacecraft. The ship had no doors or windows that could be seen. Beside the ship was one of the pilots. The pilot was still in its bizarre space suit. It was tall and very skinny, but had a very large helmet. The helmet didn't have a shield but a robotic-looking faceplate. Two of the workers picked it up and said it had little weight. It appeared to be dead. Others found a second suit. The suit was empty. It was lying in the nearby grass. Still, others tried to get into the ship to look for any more survivors. Then suddenly, an army helicopter appeared. The army came in great numbers to secure the location. Troops surrounded the workers' camp and forced them to stay. They were there for 2 days afterward. The military told the workers that no one would believe them if they told what transpired. Who would believe hobos, drunks, and uneducated Mexicans? The foreman told the workers to do what the military said and no one would get hurt. While trapped there, my mother observed the whole situation. On one of the 2 days trapped there, she met an unusual person. While sitting waiting for the occupation to be over, a person wearing a large blanket approached her from behind. In a bizarre mechanical voice, the strange individual asked her, "Are they looking for me?" She turned to see a mechanical face under the blanket. There appeared to be lips moving, but there was a delay of sound coming from them. She realized it was not human and told it yes. She told it to keep away from the military and look for a chance to escape. There is a happy ending to this story. When the army was still there cleaning up, the hobos found the surviving crew member. They put a hooded coat on it and other clothes to totally cover it up. They poured booze over it to make it smell like a drunk and helped it since it had trouble walking. When the bus came to pick up a batch of workers, the workers carried it onto the bus. It suddenly spoke with its mechanical voice, "Are they still looking for me?" They told it to shut up and get on the bus. The family left the next day. Those who took the alien were never seen again. This incident occurred in the late winter of 2009 at our home in West Texas. We were having a family or friends get together to celebrate a birthday. During the celebration, two of my nephews and a niece came tearing into the house, screaming at the top of their lungs, saying that a plane crashed in one of the adjacent pastures. My brother, myself, and about three others walked outside to see what was causing all the ruckus. We didn't see anything out of the ordinary except a strange burning smell that smelled like burning mesquite. We didn't think anything of it since it was kind of nippy and someone could have been burning some wood in their fireplaces. We told them to show us where they saw the plane go down and we walked over to the place they showed us. The first thing we noticed was that all the dogs in the area were going bonkers. They were barking up a storm like they were all seeing the same thing. The area we live in is pretty much a rural community unless you live in the city of Monahans, Texas. Many of the houses are set on large plots of land, usually 4 to 5 acres per house. Although we can see the houses of many of our neighbors and we do have traffic on the road, you do get the feeling of being all to yourself out here. Some of the land by our house is overrun by wild mesquite trees. Only a small portion of the land surrounding the house is cultivated and cleared out. Beyond the stand of trees runs a small barbed wire fence that separates us from our neighbors, who I could see were home from the lights on in the house. We walked around the edge of the trees, not wanting to really go into the stand at night. Even though it is technically winter, there could be rattlesnakes seeking shelter in amongst the trees, not to mention that mesquite trees have some wicked thorns that protrude from them. They are razor sharp and quite capable of punching through a pair of jeans or boots and they hurt like hell to get out. As we looked around, we started noticing a sort of electrical charge to the very air around us. Almost like the kind you feel when you approach a large electrical substation or a charged and active radio antenna. As we made our way around the trees, one of my brothers noticed some light peeking through the trees. I told him it was probably one of the neighbors leaving or coming home. He promptly told me that it couldn't be headlights because the light seemed too diffused and not as concentrated as a car's headlight. We moved around and as we cleared the stand of trees, we were shocked to see an oval-shaped object hovering, maybe 4 to 5 feet off the ground. We stood there in total shock. I can only imagine that our jaws were probably on the ground. As we stood there watching this object hover there without a sound, I took note that the object was maybe about 30 to 40 feet from front to back, it was maybe the same dimensions around. The object seemed to be of a highly polished material that reflected the area around it. The reflection of the distant street lights from the surrounding neighbors' properties seemed to reflect off the surface of the object. There was also a small dull glow to the object, barely noticeable unless you were really looking, almost like an aura of sorts, an iridescent blue of sorts. As we stood there in total shock, my brother next to me expressing his disbelief, we saw two strange-looking men appear from around the object. They at first didn't notice us, they were busy running around and gathering objects from the ground, from the trees. They didn't seem to notice us at first. They looked to be about the size of my oldest nephew, about 4 feet tall, but they looked very skinny, like they had no meat on their bones. Their heads were large and their arms were long, skinny, and hung down around their knees. About this time my two nephews came walking up behind us, scaring the hell out of us. They saw the object and the strange man and in a voice that only a kid can project, screamed out loud, "What are those things?" That's when the creatures turned and noticed us. The sight of these creatures was something that will haunt me till the day I die. It turned and looked right at us. Its eyes were large, almost like the eyes of a praying mantis, except they were jet black and wrapped around its head. The two creatures looked at us for about 7 seconds, not an ounce of movement, before they calmly walked around the craft, one right after the other. They disappeared behind the craft and we never saw them again. A few seconds later the craft lifts up, not a sound coming from the object, no rush of wind, not even a swaying of the nearby branches of a mesquite tree. It rose quietly and hovered about 40 feet from the ground, and shot out like a bat out of hell. As it zoomed away, it started glowing and made it easier to track as it zoomed away, getting higher and higher till it faded away. We stood there in complete silence as we tried to make heads or tails of what the hell we just saw. My brother finally piped up and said, "Should we call the police?" After which, I burst out in laughter and replied to him and tell them what? My nephew looked like he had just seen the devil himself, which considering what we just saw, I don't blame him. He didn't want to talk about it, and after we made our way back to the house, he still didn't talk about it. I tried to ask him about it yesterday and he basically told me that he didn't want to think about it yet, he was still processing what had happened to him. I was more than happy to leave it at that. I never really believed in the subject of UFOs or aliens, but after the events of this night, I'm seriously going to reevaluate that belief. I know that I plan to keep my mind open and start looking up towards the sky a little bit more from now on. Thank you.